You're listening to Quantum Harry the Podcast, a podcast version of the book Quantum Harry, A Unified Theory of the Potterverse by B.L. Purdom. Episode 5, Our Father. The quote from Chapter 28 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, Snape's worst memory. He knew how it felt to be humiliated in the middle of a circle of onlookers, knew exactly how Snape had felt as his father had taunted him. Judging from what he had seen, his father had been every bit as arrogant as Snape had always told him. In the last episode, we looked at Harry's relationships with characters who embody the mother archetype. His relationships with archetypal fathers are also key, especially in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, which is the book ruled by the father archetype, though James Potter plays only a cameo role. Hagrid stands out amongst the many characters who mother Harry because he's a male character playing a traditionally female role, an archetypal mother. Likewise, there is a female character who doesn't mother Harry, but seems much more determined to be a father to him. Minerva McGonagall. Professor McGonagall conspicuously lacks many archetypal mother attributes. She doesn't knit or weave like Molly Weasley, Hagrid, Hermione, or the mythical Penelope. She doesn't nurture or coddle like Molly and Hagrid again, nor attempt to repress Harry like Aunt Petunia or Dolores Umbridge. And she's definitely not linked romantically to one of Harry's father figures the way Cho Chang is linked to Cedric Diggory. Instead, Minerva McGonagall does what archetypal fathers do. In the fifth book, she is determined to help Harry become an Auror as a direct challenge to Dolores Umbridge. And their argument over Harry's career comes off very much like a father and a mother engaging in a tug of war over a son's future path. In his first year, McGonagall gives Harry his battle rank in his most prominent metaphorical war. He becomes the seeker on the Gryffindor Quidditch team. Her no-nonsense demeanor and concern with Harry's battle training and future prospects are not the exclusive domain of fathers in the modern world, where these roles are shared with mothers. But these attributes seldom come up in connection to archetypal mothers in myth and folklore. They're instead usually linked to father figures. She even plays the role of a stereotypical, pacing, expectant father in the maternity ward waiting room when she spends a day on Privet Drive awaiting Hagrid's arrival with baby Harry, who is metaphorically reborn as a pseudo-muggle. Again, many fathers today are in the same room as their partners during a birth, but McGonagall in the early part of Philosopher's Stone is a classic expectant father right out of Mad Men. In the last episode, I also spoke about its being no coincidence that the one who delivers Harry, and I use the word delivers deliberately, is Hagrid, an archetypal mother despite his gender. He speaks of flying over Bristol and therefore the body of water called Bristol Channel to reach Surrey from Godric's Hollow. Joseph Campbell has established that a hero crossing water at a crucial time in his journey experiences a metaphorical rebirth. It's symbolically equivalent to the waters of the womb. And of course, baptism is also a symbolic rebirth. Though J.K. Rowling has spoken of Hagrid being fatherly to Harry when he's carrying his body out of the forest in Deathly Hallows, this image comes across very much as a pietà moment. That is the title given to many of the depictions in art of the Virgin Mary holding the body of the crucified Christ. And she's often shown weeping over him as Hagrid weeps over Harry. If J.K. Rowling does actually think of Hagrid as a father figure for Harry and McGonagall as a mother figure, then whether consciously or unconsciously, she is subverting the idea of what a father is and what a mother is by having almost all of Hagrid's character traits and actions fall neatly into the archetype of the mother, rather than the archetypal father. And the same goes for her subverting archetypes with McGonagall, who, if she was to be a mother figure for Harry, is a decidedly fatherly one. So again, just because it's possible to identify archetypes in the books that have long been identified as male or female, don't assume that Rowling is being unrelentingly binary about gender, because this is neither the first nor last time that I'll be talking about her subverting archetypes this way. Our next father is the other chosen one, Neville Longbottom. Early on, Neville appears as a companion to Hermione, an archetypal mother. They engage in a somewhat domestic activity, searching for a lost child, Trevor the Toad. Soon after this, Harry crosses the lake at Hogwarts with his new pseudo-family, Ron in the role of the wise old man who is inculcating Harry in wizarding culture, and Hermione and Neville, a symbolic mother and a symbolic father, which is an echo of McGonagall, an archetypal father, being with baby Harry on Privet Drive with the wise old man, Dumbledore, and Hagrid, an archetypal mother. This is Harry's second rebirth. Coming to the Dursleys was the first. Both times, he crosses water with an archetypal mother and is also joined by a father and a wise old man. Neville might seem like another child to Hermione, who mothers everyone indiscriminately at this point in her life. The dynamic between Hermione and Harry, or Hermione and Ron, is different than the dynamic between her and Neville. She's more solicitous of Neville, and she often partners with him, especially in potions, which is a kind of symbolic domesticity. Neville is a symbolic father to Harry in many ways in the first book. During the flying lesson, Neville cannot control his broom, possibly pointing to prodigious powers that he just can't rein in yet. Even though he grew up in the wizarding world and kids like Draco were flying before coming to Hogwarts, Neville's grandmother kept him away from brooms. Neville's actions during the flying lesson land Harry on the house team, making him a virtual father to Harry the Seeker, along with Professor McGonagall. Neville can see Thestrals like Luna Lovegood, who is an archetypal crone. Plus, the reason that Harry can see the Thestrals now is that he saw Cedric Diggory, another father figure, murdered before his eyes, a reenactment of James Potter's murder. J.K. Rowling really loves her complete sets. Together, Harry, Neville, and Luna's archetypes again represent youth, parenthood, and old age, another complete trio of life stages. While the other three who go with them to the Ministry at the end of the fifth book, but who cannot see Thestrals, Ginny, Hermione, and Ron, also represent youth, Ginny, the archetypal maiden, parenthood, Hermione, the archetypal mother, and old age, Ron, the wise old man. Harry is with the archetypal mother, father, and wise old man again when he meets Fluffy, the three-headed Cerberus-like dog that is the first obstacle to the Philosopher's Stone. Characters aligning with these archetypes accompany him at crossings into new worlds. The maiden, represented by Ginny, saw Harry off on his journey, and the crone, Luna, later accompanies him when he starts to confront death, but his virtual parents, the archetypal mother and father, and a virtual grandfather, if you will, the wise old man, accompany him at these other times. At the end of the first book, Neville is an authority figure, which is to say, a father figure, when he tries to prevent Harry, Ron, and Hermione from leaving Gryffindor Tower to try to stop Snape from getting to the Philosopher's Stone, or so they think. Hermione, the archetypal mother, incapacitates Neville with a full body bind. Dumbledore later rewards Neville for standing up to his friends, reinforcing that Neville was not in the wrong. And so, those responsible for Gryffindor winning the House Cup are Harry and an archetypal mother, father, and wise old man. Neville has secrets that give Harry pause. The scene in Order of the Phoenix that takes place in the long-term residence ward in St. Mungo's reinforces that Neville is, despite his youth, in a situation often experienced by older men. His parents are mentally incapacitated, and so he visits them in an institutional setting. He's being raised by his grandmother, so in a way, he's now his own father, who she also raised. This may be why Neville often seems more like an older man rather than a teenager. Neville's aptitude for herbology reinforces his father role. He nurtures plants and learns how to make them flourish. In the Department of Mysteries, Neville carries Hermione after she's injured. He also takes on his own father's role when Bellatrix Lestrange tortures him. Time and again, Neville is a virtual father to Harry, plays Hermione's partner, or he repeats things that his own father did, becoming him, in effect, despite his grandmother's best efforts. Neville Longbottom is not the only chronologically young father in the Harry Potter books. Cedric Diggory also embodies this archetype. At first, we only know that he, like James, is an excellent Quidditch player and a sharer of power. Early in Goblet of Fire, Cedric and Harry take a portkey to a wizarding competition that later includes masked Death Eaters. This is inverted in the book's climax, when Harry and Cedric take a portkey from a wizarding competition to another place with Death Eaters. The picture of Cedric in Goblet of Fire is even more idealistic than in the third book. He's not unlike the way Harry still imagines James Potter. Cedric is a leader, a prefect, while James became head boy. Cedric is an enviable Quidditch player, admired by all, yet also humble and self-effacing, which is also how Harry imagines James. In the fifth and sixth books, we learn that James was not all that, but Harry is still in the dark about his father bullying Snape during the fourth book. In Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry denies to Snape that his father was arrogant and dangerous, and there's nothing that contradicts this in the fourth book, when James only appears as a ghostly image emerging from Voldemort's wand. Cedric is the idealized father, James, before Harry learns he had feet of clay. Through Harry's eyes, he's handsome, he's skilled, he's virtuous, and then he's a victim, killed in the same flash of green light that accompanied James's death, which Harry sort of remembers in both his dreams and in the previous book when he came too close to Dementors. In the previous episode, I talked about how Cedric being an archetypal father adds an Oedipal spin to Harry's relationship with Cho Chang, an archetypal mother. And while Cedric doesn't die specifically because of trying to avoid a prophecy coming true, like the father of Oedipus, which is closer to what Voldemort attempts to do, Cedric does make a decision that contributes to his own death, which Harry also accidentally contributes to when he insists that Harry take the Triwizard Cup with him, and Harry agrees. However, Cedric definitely comes off better than the father of Oedipus, since what Cedric did was to try to share power, rather than abandoning a baby to avoid the baby eventually killing him. Barty Crouch Jr., in the role of Mad-Eye Moody, is another father figure to Harry, but like Quirrell and Mr. Lovegood, who were failed wise old men, and Dolores Umbridge and Petunia Dursley, who are not good or helpful versions of the mother archetype, he is also not a helpful version of the archetypal father, one who was planning to deliver Harry to his arch-enemy, Voldemort. Crouch hasn't always been an archetypal father. He is a youth to his own father, Barty Crouch Sr., who helps his son to escape from Azkaban by using Polyjuice Potion, so his wife and son can switch places. After he does, he basically keeps his son under house arrest for years, attempting to control him with the Imperius Curse. When Crouch Jr. then keeps Moody prisoner in his own trunk, he is actually stepping into his own father's shoes, since he was similarly kept prisoner. And when he's pretending to be Moody, he repeatedly tries to father Harry, lulling him into a false sense of security, including trying to help Harry see the best way to deal with the dragon in the first tournament task, flying on his broomstick. This activity is almost always linked to Harry's father figures. His father, James, is lauded as a superior Quidditch player. McGonagall gives Harry the position of Seeker on the house team, making him the youngest player in a century. And Neville, losing his Remembrall to Draco Malfoy, prompts Harry to hop on a broom before he's told that he can, which is how McGonagall sees what a natural flyer he is. And in particular, she gets to witness Harry catching Neville's Remembrall, a distinctly snitch-like object. Crouch Jr. continues this pattern, and though he fails in his attempt to get Neville, another archetypal father, to clue Harry into the wonders of Gillyweed, he's also intimately involved in manipulating what happens to all of the champions in the maze, though he fails to anticipate Harry and Cedric, another father figure, taking the tournament cup together. Arthur Weasley is another obvious father figure, but Harry isn't alienated by him. He's treated like family, especially when Nagini bites Arthur. When this occurs, Harry is witnessing yet another father figure being attacked, but this time he manages to save him. What he couldn't do for James or for Cedric, he can do for Arthur, though he feels guilty because he's convinced temporarily that he's to blame. This maintains the pattern of Harry feeling responsible for his father figures being attacked. In Order of the Phoenix, Harry also sees his only female father figure, Professor McGonagall, cursed by Aurors when they're attempting to apprehend one of Harry's mother figures, Hagrid, who runs from the Aurors while carrying his dog Fang, as if he's a baby, which is yet another echo of the attack in Godric's Hollow when Harry's parents were killed and his mother tried to flee with baby Harry. At the end of Goblet of Fire, the mother, father, and wise old man again accompany Harry in the graveyard in Little Hangleton in incorporeal forms, just as they do in the final book when he is walking to his death in the forest. In Goblet of Fire, the wise old man is the murdered muggle Frank Bryce, whose death Harry witnessed at the beginning of the book. The mother is obvious, Lily, and the father is doubled by James and Cedric, who emerges from Voldemort's wand first as the most recent victim, while James emerges last. We've now looked at the ruling archetypes for the first, second, and third books, the wise old man, the maiden, and the mother. The ruling archetype for the fourth book, Goblet of Fire, is the father, and the character best embodying this archetype in the fourth book is Cedric Diggory. One of the marks of how the series begins here to depart from the patterns of the three earlier books is seen in Harry stepping into Cedric's shoes many times during the fourth book, not just at the end. He's declared a Hogwarts champion, which is also Cedric's title. He is, in effect, a shadow champion to Cedric throughout the book, until their roles are reversed in the climax and Harry becomes the sole Hogwarts champion, while Cedric becomes a literal shadow. Harry tells Cedric about the dragons in the first task, and in turn, Cedric gives Harry away through the prefect's bath to work on the clue of the egg that he took from the dragon. Since Harry wouldn't otherwise have a reason to go in that bathroom, this is very clearly another moment when he is walking in Cedric's shoes. In the unofficial task of the Yule Ball, or, as J.K. Rowling calls it, the unexpected task, and it is something we should see as the second out of four, not three tasks in the tournament, just as Harry makes four and not three champions, Harry vies with Cedric to go to the ball with the archetypal mother Cho Chang, but Cedric asks her first. Harry also attempts to rescue her from the lake, but Cedric rescues her instead. Finally, Harry and Cedric see each other as equals and take the tournament cup together, which is fatal for Cedric. Unlike the previous books, this time when Harry steps into the shoes of the character who best embodies the ruling archetype of the book, it's something he almost immediately regrets. Not only does being the other Hogwarts champion, a shadow champion, bring him unwanted attention, ridicule, and even cause a rift with his best friend for a while, it doesn't lead to a win for him, as in the previous books, despite the fact that Harry is the nominal winner of the tournament. Instead, it leads to Cedric's death and Voldemort's resurrection. The archetypal fathers Harry encounters inspire him at turns to admire, to emulate, to scorn, and to protect. He learns a great deal from wise old men, but never identifies with them to the extent that he does with his father figures, foreshadowing his eventual evolution into a father himself, which J.K. Rowling shows in the epilogue of the seventh book, when he tries to give reassurance to his youngest son that the bravest man he ever knew was a Slytherin, the act of a father who never really had a father himself, but who learned how to be one, and how not to be one, from the many archetypal fathers he meets during his heroic journey. You've been listening to Quantum Harry the Podcast, a podcast version of the book Quantum Harry, A Unified Theory of the Potterverse by B.L. Purdom. All music heard on Quantum Harry is composed and performed by B.L. Purdom. Next time on Quantum Harry the Podcast, Episode 6, A Murder of Crones, an examination of the archetype of the crone in the Harry Potter series. I hope you'll join me. For video episodes, go to the Quantum Harry Facebook page. To ask BL Purdom to be a guest on your podcast, send a message to @QHPodcast on Twitter.